Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we're going to talk about urban anthropology. This is an interesting story. During the late 1990s, a group of cultural anthropologists in this city in Milwaukee began meeting to talk about ways they might make contributions to Milwaukee using skills that they acquired through the study and practice of anthropology. And those skills include cultural research, museum curation, cultural land use, neighborhood oral histories, teaching filmmaking, and other art forms. Urban anthropology evolved out of those meetings, and they incorporated in 1999. They do some very, very interesting things in the city of Milwaukee, including making documentaries about certain neighborhoods, doing tours of certain neighborhoods, and actually doing things that will enhance the neighborhoods that they have been studying. I was not aware of this until I read it in their material, which I find very interesting. Milwaukee is the third most ethnically diverse urban area in the country after Chicago and New York. And they talk about the fact that there are some cultural groups that have very similar cultural traits and tend to be located in some of the same neighborhoods. We'll talk about that during the course of this hour. Joining us this hour is Rick Petrie. He is Executive Director of Urban Anthropology. And thank you very much, Rick, for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, congratulations on an extremely interesting organization. We're going to have fun this hour. Jill Florence Lackey is Principal Investigator for Urban Anthropology. And Jill, thank you very much for being
with us. You're welcome.
I don't think it is widely known that Milwaukee is as culturally diverse as it is. That's quite something. How did it become so culturally diverse?
It's very difficult to say. I think that you have to kind of look to John Goethe's work, where he talks about the initial German organization of Milwaukee and how the fact that this was considered to be an ethnic city from the start, especially with the Germans and the different populations that they were friendly with that they brought in, that this was different. This was a different kind of a city. And that it made it, as John Goethe refers to, as friendly, as welcoming to other ethnic groups. And I think that's what kind of sent us on this road. And, of course, today we're known for our ethnic festivals and all the different things.
Mm-hmm. And you have discovered that there are certain neighborhoods where certain ethnic groups live together, even though they have different cultural backgrounds, but there's more that unites them, there's more that's similar about their cultural backgrounds than different, Rick?
That's sort of the purpose of our Old Southside Settlement Museum, to point out the cultural similarities. We're in the Lincoln Village and Barron Park area on the south side, and the museum celebrates the cultures that were prominent in the area. Early on, it was settled by Polish, and about the 1960s is when a large Latino population started moving in, mainly Mexicans. And part of our museum, the story that we tell in our museum, shows how the Poles and the Latinos have it's very similar cultural traits, similar leisure time activities, the family structure, the extended family structure, the fact that they're Catholic and that they came mainly from rural backgrounds. So these are the things that people learn when they take the tour of our museum.
So did Latinos know that and purposely choose this neighborhood, or did it happen by chance?
I think that when you look at other cities, it's very similar. It's very possible that a lot of the, especially Mexican Americans, looked for areas of the city that had a lot of Catholic churches initially, and they ended up going to some of the Polish neighborhoods, because you see the same pattern, for example, where you have large Polish populations like in New York and Chicago. You see that same pattern existing. And then on the north side, where you had the Germans primarily, the German Protestants, you did have a tendency for the African Americans to settle there. And you do see this in other cities, where African Americans will tend to settle where the German populations and Jewish populations are. It may be in part because these were the more tolerant ethnic groups toward African Americans, which is not generally known because, of course, with Hitler and everything,
right,
you assume assumed.
Right.
You assume the opposite with the Germans, but actually the Germans, in Georgia, in their very first city. In America, which was Germantown in Pennsylvania, they outlawed slavery. And you don't see Germans ever, well, I can't say ever, but you rarely see Germans that own slaves at any time, which shows up because you don't see many African Americans today with German names. Mm-hmm. Likewise with the Jewish populations, there wasn't a tendency to own slaves and so on. So, and they also have other common denominators. A very big, the three cultural groups on the north side have always been very big in terms of different kinds of leisure time activities, very big in terms of music and theater and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting, the whole progressive German socialist tradition of this city of Milwaukee, it's quite profound, isn't it? Yeah. And it's had a big impact on the way the city is now.
Yes. Yeah,
that's the reason that there were three socialist mayors in Milwaukee. It's because of the influence of the 48ers, the Germans who fled the 1848 revolution. They're the ones who were very prominent in, founding Turner Hall. The Turners were, the German cultural organization.
Mm-hmm. So you have chosen certain neighborhoods really piqued your interest in all of this and decided to do documentaries and tours of certain vital parts of the city. How did you choose where you would devote your time?
Initially, we were very interested our documentaries and our studies were mainly of cultural groups. We did over 30 of those over the last 12 years. But when we did pick neighborhoods, we tried to pick the neighborhoods that were most known for their cultural diversity, like Lincoln Village, where we are now settled in, are the neighborhood association for that area. And we also selected River West. We selected Sherman Park. We also selected Jones Island simply because it was such an interesting community, of course.
Yes, it is.
Was.
Right. Well, tell us about the community. As long as you brought it up, we think of Jones Island as Jones Island. Now, what was it previously?
Well, initially it was a fishing village, and that disbanded completely in the early 1940s and was pretty well extinct by the 1930s and 1920s. But it was a very interesting village of fisher folk that were mainly Kashubians that had lived in the Baltic Sea area, especially on the Hel Peninsula of Poland. And Rick and I actually made a point of actually going to these areas in Poland to actually investigate what it looks like now, for example, on the Hel Peninsula. But these fisher folks formed this village. They never actually held the deeds to the land, but they formed the village sometime after the Civil War. It isn't clear exactly when, but by 1890s they were in there solidified. And from there, they lived without electricity, without the usual city services and everything, and they existed as a fishing village until they were pretty much kicked out by the city because the city wanted to locate a sewer plant there.
Where did they go? Do you know?
Yeah, they actually went to the neighborhoods that we're very involved in today. We have actually houses that came directly off of Jones Island that are in the neighborhood that we're the neighborhood association for today. And they went mainly to Bayview and to the Lincoln Village, Barron Park neighborhoods where they settled.
Very interesting.
Yeah, there was already a heavy Polish population there already. So that's, very logical that they would settle there.
Yeah. Now, let me ask first, though, the question has been asked, what makes your study different from a historical study of a neighborhood? What's the anthropology element?
What we're looking for is not just history. We're very interested in history because history is a clear and very important part of culture. But we're also interested in those particular cultural traits that define a cultural group. For example, how did they tend to earn a living? What was their social network like? What was their sense of social organization, mm-hmm. like family styles? Mm-hmm. And to some extent, what were their personalities? What did they value a lot? And that's what we've done all the way through in all the different studies that we have done in Milwaukee, is to look at not simply the history, but also to look at all these other facets of their culture.
And how does all of that study inform the present? I know that you're doing some very interesting, making sure an ice skating rink is open, doing buildings, murals on buildings, trying to get artists to move to some of these neighborhoods. How do you determine how the cultural past weaves its way into the future, into the present and the future?
Well, anytime we do something involving public artwork, like we've had some funding to do some public artwork in Kosciuszko Park, we involve the community and try to let them know as much as possible and what the history was and what the cultural was. We have two projects that are children's art pillars that we collaborated on with children from local elementary schools. And they're three-sided pillars that have tiles that depict various aspects of the different cultural groups. You know, one side depicts on one pillar, one side depicts the Polish, the other side depicts Mexican Americans, and the other side depicts the Native Americans, which have actually a fairly large presence in the Lincoln Village neighborhood. And when we went into the schools, we wanted to make sure that the children who were working on the tiles knew, you know, the culture and the history. So we basically took them through a lot of the things that were, you know, very important in the cultures that they were going to be depicting.
Also, when we do our ethnic studies, we are looking at what is the ethnic group about today? What are their organizations? For example, you might be surprised to know how many ethnic organizations there are in the greater Milwaukee area, which is over 350.
Woo.
Yes, everyone's shocked at that today. And we have 6,000 pages of interview transcripts. We got that from. But we're looking at the ethnic practices today. You know, what sort of holidays, what sort of get-togethers do they have? What kind of organizations do they have? How do they define their personalities? How do they define their histories and their movements throughout the greater Milwaukee area and so on? So we're really looking at the ethnic groups today. And like Rick described, we're also looking at the ethnic groups as they contributed to Milwaukee and to specific neighborhoods. And we try to show that in art forms, especially those done by the youth. Hmm.
How much integration is there of those cultures? When you mention certain neighborhoods are Latino, Polish, or German, Jewish, how do they go to each other's homes and have dinner? Do they socialize, or are they pretty much to themselves, even though they're in an integrated neighborhood?
You know, it's hard to say. We do know in our neighborhood, in Lincoln Village and Barron Park neighborhood, that there's a lot of intermarriage between Poles and Latinos because they shared so much the neighborhood and the history of the neighborhood. So we find that there is a lot of interaction between. It's not, you know, it's not like a separation, at least in the Lincoln Village neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. I would say what Rick is saying is absolutely true. In some neighborhoods, there's more separation. For example, you go to Sherman Park, and the African-Americans, even African-Americans, the other Europeans, and the Hasidic Jews in that neighborhood will stay apart. They'll come together for social functions, but a lot of that has to do with religion. For example, the Orthodox Jews, of course, can't eat the foods that other people eat and so on. So in some areas, you see a fair amount of separation. In the area that we're neighborhood association for, you don't see that much separation. When you get together for block clubs and so on, and we run about, what is it, Rick, about 30 block clubs?
Yeah, about that.
You don't see the separation in terms of the interests in the neighborhood. You don't even think anymore, oh, that's an old Polish family there, and this is a relatively new Mexican-American family, this is a Puerto Rican family, this is a Native family, and so on, because they're so well integrated together. But in some neighborhoods, because of different sanctions regarding religion and so forth, you might see a little more separation.
Right. Let's talk about, it's a fascinating history, and the civil rights movement, as you write about, has informed the current history of Bronzeville.
Yes.
Tell me about the neighborhood.
The Bronzeville neighborhood. Well, the Bronzeville neighborhood began pretty much came to its height after World War I, and when you had the great migration of the African Americans, and they were coming into Milwaukee in larger numbers, probably reached its height in the early 1940s, and was in the area roughly. And this, the reader or your listeners are going to call in with the disputes about the boundaries, because there are disputes about the boundaries, but. Roughly was the area between what might be considered today's Holton Street to about 27th Street, and some will go as far as narrow as 3rd Street to 16th Street, and from about Juneau to about North Avenue. And it was a very strong community of African Americans who were there, not necessarily by choice, but because they weren't allowed to live elsewhere in many cases. And, of course, this was a neighborhood that was destroyed by two factors, and that was the Urban Renewal Program, which took out about, and the combination freeway development, which took out 8,000 homes.
Really?
8,000 homes. Ooh. And even perhaps a bigger factor, and I say bigger because it's something that I think may have even more long-range issues for the African-American community, was it took out their entire business sector, which was located on and around Walnut Street, which is today their freeway, that freeway area. Mm-hmm. And at that time, if you look at the 1950s, what they called the Negro Business Directory, you'll see that there were over 500 businesses located in that area at that time, all which dispersed to various areas of the city. And, of course, these were not mom-and-pop stores that could be relocated in a white neighborhood and expect to get a clientele. So this is, and, of course, this happened in other cities, too, where black communities were taken out. And with the loss of that business community, you have a great decline in that middle-class community, which were the role models and so on for the community in the past. And I don't know if we'll ever know the total effects of the loss of Bronzeville to this city. I don't know that we will ever know, but they are enormous, have been enormous.
Yeah. We're going to welcome phone calls for our guests. Here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. And our guests are Rick Petrie, Executive Director of Urban Anthropology, Jill Florence Lackey, Principal Investigator for Urban Anthropology, based here in Milwaukee. It's a community-based membership association celebrating cultural diversity and a holistic approach to urban problem solving. They do documentaries. They do tours of some of these neighborhoods as well. And they're also working to get people, artists particularly, those who would be finding it to their liking and to their advantage in the work that they do, to live in some of these neighborhoods and to do artwork in these neighborhoods as well that celebrate the enormous diversity. I will say this again because I find it remarkable, and I'm actually somewhat proud of it because I live in the city. Milwaukee, the third most ethnically diverse urban area in the country after New York and Chicago. 800-486-8655 is the number, 800-486-8655. The email, if you'd like to use that, is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now and start with Jean in Oshkosh. Hi, Jean.
Hi, Kathleen, and your guests. Oh, my name ends with an SKI, and you just mentioned Kosciuszko Park. I was born and raised across from Kosciuszko Park, and my father was responsible for moving Tadeusz Kościuszko's statue from Beecher Street to Lincoln Avenue, where I assume it still is. This is extremely interested, and I'm acquainted with Goethe's work, but there's another taste to being born and raised in a very Polish neighborhood on the south side of Milwaukee, and that was we felt insecure, and many of my classmates felt that we, as I did, felt that we had to get out of the south side of Milwaukee in order to make professional careers, which I did and taught at 60 different universities and so on. And it's been 30 years since I've been on the back on Lincoln Avenue. But there's another aspect to it, and that is there was a great symbiotic relationship between the Polish and the merchants and the Jewish merchants who lived up Sherman Park. So there was movement, there was symbiotic relations. In fact, I worked for something called Stein's Kosciuszko Furniture Store.
Oh, great.
At a time when Stein's was the largest furniture retailer in the state of Wisconsin. And then you have things like, that doesn't exist anymore, Lincoln State Bank, which was, they viewed themselves, the officers, and my father was president there, the officers viewed themselves first as Polacks, and only secondarily as part of a community. Where is Barron Park? Is that just near the Basilica?
That's just east of the freeway now. That's just basically an adjoining neighborhood. They used to be the same neighborhood, I think, until the freeway
right. That's the neighborhood that now connects to Bayview.
Oh, it does. Okay. Was that built on the on a dump? Above the Kinnikinick River?
That's what I had heard, but we've never been able to verify that.
Well, I'm 82, and I'll verify.
Thank you.
Do you ever go home, Gene?
Do I go home?
Mm-hmm.
I've run from it most of my professional life. And I was manager of the Riviera Theater and the Lincoln Theater. Both on Lincoln Avenue, and many of my relations were in business. But I have always been fascinated by the relationship of the Jewish community coming down to Lincoln Avenue and Mitchell Street, and the Polacks.
Mm. What about this idea that he had to run from it? Is that something that you hear frequently?
Yeah.
Really?
The Polish community that moved primarily southwest, Franklin, for example, is a great home for the Poles today. It's very difficult to bring them back. The Poles that remained in the neighborhood, and they're about 20% of our neighborhood population today, they're very happy there. But the Poles that left really... You don't have that third generation that is attempting to relearn its roots that you see in other populations with the Poles. There was a tendency for people to want to say that was before. Now we have reached the middle class or the upper middle class, and we don't go back.
Hmm. Was he also saying, is Gene saying, and does this hold true for others, that you couldn't become successful? I don't know if it's financially successful or academically successful if you stayed in Milwaukee.
I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
I've never heard that before.
The people didn't face discrimination that you're aware of?
Not that I'm aware of, no, yeah. Because, for example, along Lincoln Avenue, there's still a tremendous number of, well, actually, it's probably the best business district for mom and pop businesses in all of Milwaukee. It's been very successful, and there's still a large contingency of Polish businesses up and down Lincoln Avenue. Mm-hmm. In fact, he mentions the Riviera and the Lincoln Theater. The Riviera Theater is now Ben's Bicycle Shop, which was the Hanowski family, which was an old Polish family. And the Riviera Theater is now a wonderful candy store owned by a Latino group.
Ah.
Yeah, it's a great Mexican candy store.
Where is that? You darn tootin'. Well, what's the name of it?
It's, what is the...
I can't remember.
Where is
the
it?
Name. It's around 13th and Lincoln.
13th and Lincoln.
On the north side of the street.
Okay. I mean, they still have the marquee, the sign there saying Lincoln Theater.
Mm-hmm. I know where that is.
Yeah,
right?
So, yeah, go inside sometime. It's a
it's almost beautiful store you have ever seen. Ooh. It's just gorgeous.
Oh, maybe somebody will know the name and call in, too. Gene, it's time for you to go home. Don't you think Gene ought to go back to the neighborhood?
I would love to see Gene come back.
Yeah, thank you. And let's talk about the tours that you do. Are you still actively involved in doing tours of different neighborhoods?
Not of different neighborhoods. We have done a tour of Bronzeville in the past,
yes.
But the anthropologist who worked with us is no longer with us now. She moved away.
To Africa.
Oh.
Yeah. I do a tour of the Lincoln Village neighborhood called the Arts, Architecture, and Culture of Lincoln Avenue, where I point out a lot of the... architectural aspects of the buildings there with their very elaborate parapets are basically copies of things that you could see in northern Poland. I mean, like Jill said at the beginning of the show, we were in Gdansk, Poland for a while, and the type of buildings that you see there, they're very much echoed by the building style of the buildings on Lincoln Avenue.
Mm-hmm. So you do. That's the only tour you're
doing
now?
Well, we have another tour called Lost Milwaukee Tour that we're reviving this year because we have so many requests for it. And that is a tour of some of the groups that had been in Milwaukee at various times. We take them, for example, to Forest Home Cemetery, and we show them where the native villages were at the time. We take them to the area where the Irish originally settled in the Third Ward, and, of course, to Jones Island, where the Kashubes had settled, as well as to the old Bronzeville area.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Dirk in Milwaukee. Hi, Dirk.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine. How are you, Dirk?
I'm okay.
Good.
My childhood was spent living in the Oriental, Egyptian, and Phoenician theaters. Mm. And those were all Warner Brothers theaters that my dad managed.
Hmm.
The Phoenician was on Green Bay and was torn down for the freeway. It was a fabulous neighborhood. It was a neighborhood of tiny little shops and candy stores and popcorn wagons. It was a little theater of life. It was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful place to be.
And what's the location, Dirk?
That would be on Green Bay Avenue.
Okay.
Since been torn down.
Hmm.
The Phoenician was torn down. Ironically, the Egyptian lives on as a warehouse now on Belit.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
And my grandfather had a meat market on Walnut called the Venus Meat Market. And what was really fabulous about it, well, except for me getting to shoot rats in the basement, was the fact that on the signage on the front of it were two plaster Venus de Milos with their arms cut off. It was a great place. We made our own sauerkraut. Did our own kosher butchering, even though we weren't kosher. it was really, really a cool place. Well, anyway, that's, I just wanted to, you know, throw.
Oh, I'm so glad you called, Dirk. Thank you. Thank you. Would you like to respond?
I think that we hear this all the time about people that had lived in neighborhoods that were decimated and razed when urban renewal and the freeway went through. And I would hope, just hope, that in the future that when there is this kind of development, that there is some sort of studies that might be done in order to look at the long-term impact of these razings.
Mm-hmm.
One of the major aspects of the River West neighborhood is that the major celebration, Locust Street Festival, was a celebration of the fact that they kept the freeway from going through there and splitting up the neighborhood.
Huh. Likewise with Sherman Park, that they fought. They fought that and won.
Well, that's interesting. Huh. We had somebody send in, it's Dulceria La Mexicana is the name of the store at 1404 West Lincoln Avenue, located along one of the busiest commercial strips in Lincoln Village. The candy store can now fill all of Milwaukee's needs for Mexican candy, piñatas, and party supplies. Somebody from the store must have run in. The large candy store is in the old Lincoln Theater building.
Yes, I'm so glad that they cleared that up. That's, it's such a wonderful store. In fact, when we have tours, that tends to be the thing that everybody remembers all the time is that candy store.
Yeah, one time I had a tour of MIAD students, Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design. They just love that candy store. I mean, they go in and they just, you know, all the bright colors, all the things that you've never seen.
The
and
artistry is wonderful.
Is it?
Piñatas there, too. I mean,
oh, they have piñatas, too?
Yes. Lots of piñatas.
Oh,
they have a little
like
stage in the back, and they sometimes have little performances and everything. It's just wonderful. It's just a fabulous store.
All right. I'm on my way. Thank you, Dirk, very much for the call. We go to Melody in Oshkosh. Hi, Melody.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have grown up in Wisconsin, but we've also lived a number of different places in the United States, and I'm always, I've always got my ears perked for anything that might mention Wisconsin or Milwaukee or, you know, Packers, that kind of thing. And I've always been impressed with things like the Ella Fitzgerald and Cole Porter songs and the Miracle on 34th Street as far as Milwaukee is mentioned as being this, like, you know, giant and important spot in, you know, and sometimes even beating out Chicago. And I'm just wondering if your speakers have any insight on where Milwaukee fit historically in the national setting, and if it is still as prominent or when that switched as far as its prominency.
I think you're referring to maybe Bronzeville. There were a large number of very well-known jazz musicians who played at some of the nightclubs in Bronzeville. You know, Duke Ellington, Ella Fitzgerald, I mean, all the jazz greats. And I think even some blues legends used to live in Milwaukee, such as, I just remember hearing about Hubert Sumlin, the blues artist who died recently. He called Milwaukee his home for many years.
Oh, wouldn't you have loved to have been alive to hear Duke and Ella in Bronzeville? Oh, my. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melody. Thanks very much for the call. Victor in Milwaukee. Hi, Victor.
Good morning. Good morning to your guests. I'm curious, did the Chinese ever establish a community here? Because you rarely hear about them. You know, I see businesses here and there, because you have a Chinatown in Chicago on Archer.
You have a Chinatown everywhere in America, don't you? It always amazes me, in the middle of nowhere, there's a great Chinese restaurant. That's a good question. Is there an established Chinese community here?
There are a number of Chinese and Taiwanese organizations in town. The Chinese ethnic group is not very large here, but they certainly managed to have a number of organizations. You can actually go on our website and look for the document on the ethnic organizations and find out what those organizations are. There, a lot of the Chinese population is associated with different functions at UWM right now. The Toy family was one of the older of the Chinese families and, of course, had a couple of restaurants in town very early on.
Anything else, Victor?
No, thank you.
All right, thanks very much for the call. There is a large Hmong community. Can you talk about the Hmong community in Milwaukee?
Yeah, there's a very large Hmong community. There's only about three areas in the country where the Hmong, during their secondary migration, actually settled. One is Texas, one is California. Actually, there's probably four. One is Minnesota, and one is Wisconsin. And the Hmong community is large in Milwaukee, and it is very well organized and has a number of very successful organizations. They've been a very successful ethnic group in terms of coming from a rural population where they hadn't used, oftentimes didn't have any formal currency, didn't even have a written language until the 1950s. And they've done very well in Milwaukee. And today you find Hmong college professors, you find Hmong physicians, and so on. The Hmong haven't settled specifically in one area of the city. There were a lot of Hmong on the south side until fairly recently, and there's a fair settlement of Hmong up on around 76 in Hampton now. But they're settled throughout the city. We have Hmong in our neighborhood as well.
So there are pockets. There might be four Hmong families.
But you have to realize that when you're talking about the later ethnic groups, as opposed to the earlier came into raw land, and they built their neighborhoods from scratch. A Hmong population that comes in the 70s and on after that has to purchase homes that are available for purchase, and there may not be a whole block full of homes available for purchase at the same time. So they don't have that opportunity to necessarily live in the same area.
Isn't it astounding, people coming from where they came from with no written language, a warm climate, and coming to Wisconsin and doing fine? What? The challenges are unbelievable.
Our interviews are almost hysterical when they talk about what they went through, how some of the younger Hmong that were here, that came here with sponsors, would walk outside in bare feet and say, "What is this cold white stuff on my feet?" Or how the people didn't understand there wasn't much research done on the Hmong in terms of what you do for them, and how they would talk about people bringing them things like peanut butter sandwiches and expecting them to eat them and so on.
Right. Let's go to, thanks, Victor, for your call. Jean in East Troy. Hi, Jean.
Good morning. This is a very interesting program. I am originally from Milwaukee, the north side of Milwaukee, and it was interesting to hear about the Green Bay Avenue. I used to walk from 11th and Keefe from my grandma's to do shopping on Green Bay Avenue for her. But then when you mentioned the Chinese settlement and the Toy family, they were wonderful people. I used to babysit for a couple of those families for their children. Very good families.
Great. Yes, they had certainly had some wonderful restaurants.
That they did. I learned a few tricks of the trade from the mothers in those families, and was still use some of those recipes. Mm.
Yes.
Do you come back to Milwaukee frequently? You're not that far away.
I don't come back to Milwaukee.
Really?
Everything I need is right around me.
Oh, but your memories.
Yes, but my memories are not where I want to be in Milwaukee.
Oh, that's interesting. Huh.
We moved out here in 1955, and I stayed put, basically.
Uh-huh.
And I have no family back in Milwaukee to visit. They've all gone to bigger rewards, I guess.
Right.
But anyway, it's an interesting program.
All right. Thanks, Gene, for the call. Glenn and Spooner. Hi, Glenn.
Hi. See, I grew up in Milwaukee for the first 12 years of my life. And going back there, I don't hear much of the talk I enjoyed so much as a kid. I guess I enjoy it more now in retrospect. But I grew up on the south side where my good friend was Norman Konieczny. And his Polish mother spoke with such an accent, you could cut it with a knife. She would get tough with us kids, pretend to be tough. She'd say, "I'll give you such a one alongside the head, you'll stay laying, then you'll have it."
Woo-hoo!
And we'd smile. Or she'd say, "Norman, go down by the bakery, get some schnecks, yeah?" And, of course, schnecks were sweet rolls. We could hardly wait for Norman to get back to his Or one more. "That man, the more I don't see him, the better I don't like him."
That's a good one. I'll remember that. Oh, that's like a Yogi Berra.
Oh, we had fun with that.
Oh, that one is funny, yeah.
And I used those when I taught English up here at Spooner High School. with my classes to start talking about language and how it changes and so on, and how the accents really never leave us. And it was just a great step into my my units on language and history of language.
Yeah. So do you come home?
Excuse me?
Do you come home?
No.
Huh.
I haven't been in Milwaukee for a long time.
Why?
So, I did take some friends down there. We lived in the south side, you know. And we were at the domes where the flowers are and everything.
Mm-hmm.
We used to play in there as kids, run around and hide in the bamboo shoots, think we were in the jungles. But I took these friends there, and there was my old house on 24th and National. So I got out of the car with my camera, and I'm backing up, you know, toward the curb to get the whole house in, and a car pulls up, and here's a bunch of guys, and they said, "Let me guess, you used to live here." So apparently they saw lots of people taking pictures of their old places.
Yeah. Thanks, Glenn. Thanks for those stories. Those are funny. That would be a fun book to put together, is all the sayings of people,
yes,
all the different groups.
Yes.
Those are classic.
Yes.
More phone calls in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Jill Florence Lackey, Principal Investigator for Urban Anthropology, and Rick Petrie, who is Executive Director of Urban Anthropology, our guest this hour on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this hour, the author of Finding Higher Ground, Adaptation in the Age of Warming. We go to Richard from Madison. Hi, Richard.
Hello. I am going to take a completely opposite track on this. On NPR, most studies that they show homogeneous societies are very successful, happy, such as Denmark. Finland has the best educational system in the world, very homogeneous. My family's lived in Milwaukee for 100 years. I just spent the weekend there at El Rey Supermercado. I'm fluent in Spanish, so I have a great time. But, you know, Germans and the black population never got along. Everybody fled. I finally sold my family house on 88th and Capitol recently. It's turning into a ghetto. So, I mean, I think if we really look at this historically, I don't think it's that much fun. There's 250,000 poor people in Milwaukee who have virtually no education, never had a job. What are we going to do with them? And when I go back to where my mother grew up on 31st Street off of Capitol, you know, every 10th house is burned out and boarded up. I mean, it's just terrible, you know. So it's just to think that everybody's getting along. Even at El Rey Supermercado, they got an armed guard in the parking lot and another armed guard before you can go to the bathroom. So, I mean, I go down there and I love Milwaukee to visit the museum. It's spectacular. But, you know, remember Father Grappi, you remember the race riots. And that has not gone away. It's an extremely segregated city. And so it's a... this revisionist thinking is just kind of sad in a way to me, because I don't think we're going to ever really get to the problem here if we just don't look at what the issues are. So.
Jill, that's yours.
I don't really know how to respond, except our focus is on ethnicity. Our focus is not on social class. There's a lot of really great organizations that deal with social class. Social class is really the issue when you're talking about crime. But what we find, for example, having finished our 12-year ethnic study, we find that groups that are more intensely involved with their ethnicity are also more tolerant of other cultural groups. And that's a finding that will come out in the book that is in production right now. So I can't speak to issues involving social class and poverty, because that's not what our organization is really about.
When is the book coming out?
Well, I'm working on the proposals right now, so hopefully within the next 2 years the book will be out.
And it will look at...
It's going to look at the interviews with 425 heavily involved ethnic representatives, ethnic leaders in Milwaukee, and it will show how the involvement in your ethnic group will help to restore the balance between individualism that we see that is just growing in our country, and the needed other side of that coin, which is collectivism. So it will attempt to show how that involvement in the ethnic groups do tend to make one a better citizen, make one more participatory in your, certainly family and extended family, but also in your neighborhoods, town, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't disagree with Richard more. This idea of diversity in a community really makes a place vibrant, as far as I'm concerned. You know, give me the city any day over the suburbs, which I grew up in, suburbs of Chicago, which were, you know, all white, and my parents were doing the best. You know, it was a thing that you, cornfields, you built your house out of the cornfields, but everybody was pretty much the same. And to live in a city where you've got, you know, this real richness of cultures makes all the difference in the world to me in terms of living, just plain old living.
And that's what we're trying to do as part of our Oasis project, is to attract people who are interested in diverse neighborhoods, mm-hmm. and in cultural diversity. I mean, this is the thing that I think is one of the major assets of the Lincoln Village and Barron Park areas.
Yeah. Yeah, there are many assets, many. Thank you for the call, Richard. Let's go to Bruce. Oh, we're almost out of time. That's too bad. All these people from Oshkosh. A lot of people went to Oshkosh from Milwaukee. Hi, Bruce.
Hi. I'm a Scotch-Irish former professor at the University of Wisconsin there, and I wanted to share a little bit of my experience with Milwaukee diversity. In 1965, I had to act as the father of the bride. The bride was a German Lutheran girl, and she was marrying a Polish Catholic boy in the huge Catholic cathedral there on the south side of Milwaukee. Her family, except for one uncle, boycotted the wedding, and so half the church was empty and the other half was standing room only. And I was the professor who walked her down the aisle because her family boycotted.
Oh, my.
Yeah. It was very interesting, and they were wonderful kids, let me tell you that. The question I called about, could your speakers talk about the cars that were invented and manufactured in early Milwaukee? I know there's been some migration out of Milwaukee by car manufacturers, but there were a number of vehicle makes that were invented there, I believe.
Oh, really?
Thank you so much for this program.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. I don't know anything about
that's
that.
That's really not our area of expertise.
Huh. I would like to say, though, that we had such a time finding any Scots-Irish that were in Milwaukee. I wish that that gentleman was still there when we were doing our study, because the Scots-Irish are such an interesting ethnic group. And what he's talking about the divisiveness among, especially like the German Protestants and the Polish Catholics, that was a factor to deal with back in the day. It's not very much, it certainly isn't really there at all today, but it certainly was a factor earlier in the 20th century.
Mm-hmm. So that half the church was empty and the half was filled to the brim. Isn't that something? I don't know. The auto question, I know it's not in your area, but that's an interesting question. Yes. I had never heard that before.
No,
that there
I'm
were
not
certain
aware
brands,
of that.
So we'll have to carry on a little bit of investigation. You have a website. I don't want the hour to go by without knowing that there's a website people can go to find out about.
Urban Anthropology Incorporated. The website is www.urban-anthropology.org.
Great. And you'll find out much more than you've heard here.
We do a lot of different things.
Yeah. We have about a minute left. Dave in Eau Claire. Hi.
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 Quite a while ago, there was a book published called Milwaukee Talk. And I recall my grandmother giving me directions saying, go down by Schuster's and turn the corner around. And then I also remember that it was a very close community, a German community. I was chewing bubble gum in my sixth grade class, and Mr. Hoffman caught me and made me put the gum on my nose for the rest of the day. And when I got home, my mother already knew about it because Mr. Hoffman lived three doors from my grandmother. My grandmother found out about it from Mr. Hoffman, and she immediately called my mother.
Yeah.
That's great. I had a teacher once who made us swallow the gum, and then she'd say, and it takes 7 years to digest. I'm not sure that was a really good thing to do.
I've been hearing that story.
Yeah.
Well, I have wonderful memories of Milwaukee, and it's a great city.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks very much for your call. Well, this was a great hour. Thank you. And thanks to our listeners for calling in. Thanks for the work that you do. It's very... Let us know when the book comes out. We'll talk further. Our thanks to Jill Florence Lackey, Principal Investigator for Urban Anthropology, and Rick Petrie, Executive Director of Urban Anthropology. Again, their website is urban-anthropology.org for more information about all the very interesting and important work that they do. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to Rhonda Fanning for on-air production in our studios here in downtown Milwaukee. And we'll be with you again tomorrow. We'll talk politics the first hour of the program, and seeing that warming is inevitable, adaptations in the age of global warming, hour two of our show. Stay tuned. Great conversations ahead.